It's your special edition rant, Friday rant of Catalog and Cocktails.
With beers.
With beers, yeah.
Cheers.
Beers and...
Although I want to say beers and BS, but...
Oh, no.
But we're not BS.
Beers and no BS.
Yeah.
How's it going, Juan?
Great. Friday, it's hot already.
Yeah, it's a little... Certainly, it's becoming...
I wonder how long we'll be able to do this outside.
It's becoming summer. Yeah, we might have to start this... There's a couple of inside places here at Lazarus, but what are you drinking?
Oh, it's hot. I'm going to just... They're prodigal pills.
Prodigal pills.
This is nice. A great. They're classic ones.
I'm drinking the Covenant Kolsch.
Oh, that's other good one.
Yeah. So, well, cheers.
Cheers. All right. Yeah. So, what's on our mind? What's on your mind today, Friday?
Well, first thing is you were at the TED conference. Was that last week?
That was last week. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just published a post, my kind of summary of. Kind of on the AI sides, mm-hmm. and in a nutshell, kind of everybody's thinking just because AI is all over the place. So many people you constantly hear, oh, this is like electricity, like these innovations have happened, mm-hmm. and we've had all. So the jobs will be lost, but jobs will be gained. This we've seen this over and over. Right? Everybody's mm-hmm. saying this, and I agree with that.
Yeah,
but I think what people are saying that are actually not acknowledging the speed that this is happening. And this is the unprecedented thing.
Yeah, it's not like overnight, like click your fingers and everybody had electricity.
No, it took a long time. But here, overnight, there is this stuff happening with AI. And literally, we're starting to go see a bunch of layoffs and things are changing.
Or at least the layoffs, people are blaming it on AI. But either way, right?
Yeah. So I think what I found interesting is AI is doing so many amazing things. And we are definitely going to cure cancer and a bunch of diseases in our lifetime. Like that's happening. Like it's just amazing that what we're seeing and stuff. Like imagine
the impact on research.
Yeah. I mean, just like imagine having your generative models that you can, instead of like typing, it returns human language. It's actually going to type in and it's going to return me cellular language, stuff that we don't humans don't understand. And that's how we're going to be able to kind of figure out the next possible things we're going to go test out for diseases. Like that's happening. But then we can use AI for doing like more crazy surveillance stuff and things. Like there's this whole spectrum of things that can happen. But what I really found interesting, this is kind of the thought that I'm kind of constantly going through my head right now. What I want people to think about is how AI is really is a forcing function for us to really rethink what humanity means. Mm-hmm. And I think we're advancing we're starting to think about what are the things that we weren't doing before, we can do now because of AI. And how that combines with other things that we do makes us more human, or reconnects the stuff that we've been losing because we're focusing so much on AI.
Yeah.
A couple examples. It's like the thing that comes to mind. I don't know if people have been looking at. There's the AI videos and music and art. So there's one artist called Kelly Bosch, and when you see her videos, it's like it's surreal. It's like how were you able to go create this stuff? And what she was saying is like. She's an artist, and AI has helped her tap into some creativity that she never even thought in her lifetime she was able to go do. So I think this is the opportunity to really start thinking about stuff that we have never ever thought about. Mm-hmm. Now, that's still about creativity, and you're providing things to humans that were entertainment to humans, and that's what's connecting to us. And at the end of the day, you're like finding things that AI is helping us, but it's in combination with other human things, which the combination of those two things are going to make us super, super powerful and happier in a way too.
Yeah.
The problem is if we just isolate ourselves just to the AI part. And I think this is the time we should start thinking about it.
Yeah. No, I think that's super interesting. I mean, those are some of the positive things that can help, right? Like being more creative, being more productive. And one interesting thing I saw in your write-up was... you know, then this gets a little more philosophical, kind of the nature of consciousness and what makes us human. And I think for the last few years and longer, right, we've been talking about like, oh, like the singularity and like artificial general intelligence and artificial super intelligence, like as it becomes so smart, it's just gonna, you know, become conscious, right? But it's interesting to see that some of these folks at TED and, you know, elsewhere are talking about like, hey, intelligence and consciousness are not the same thing. And just because something is smarter doesn't mean that it becomes all of a sudden self-aware, right? So I find that interesting, and it forces us to think a little bit about what does it mean for us to be humans? Like, is it just that we're intelligent that makes us human? Or is it the fact that we have feelings, or that, you know, we have to eat and we have to pee and we, that makes us human. Like, yeah, it's interesting.
I think part of it is also, it goes back to this, it's the social connections.
The social connection.
It's being able to understand other people and hear them and saying, oh, I understand your worries and I'm listening to you. So I think that's where this is the opportunity to really start thinking about kind of, okay, all this shit's happening right now, but like, wait, how am I going to take all this AI technology? Everything's happening with AI. What are the things that we really want to accomplish as humanity, and combine these two things together to say, oh, here's how we all really kind of unleash the best out of us. There's going to be bad things that's going to happen too, but I think the rational optimist in me says there's going to be more positive than negatives around that. There's a lot of things we're not prepared. We're not prepared for a lot of this stuff, and I think we need to prepare ourselves super fast. Like education needs to change. Like the way we do education today, this one and done, like, oh, you go to school and then you go to work and that's it. Like, we need to reskill ourselves all the time. Yeah. Like, if these systems get powerful, what we're doing today, like, you don't have to do that anymore. Then there's the next thing we need to go work on. So we need to be able to kind of train ourselves. And what are the systems that enable us to go train ourselves and so forth?
Yeah. How do you constantly be learning? And as AI gets better or things get more automated, that you like, okay. Like you were doing that, but now that's automated. Okay, now you move on to the next thing.
What's the next thing? Yeah. Okay. And that's constantly going to keep happening right now. And it's going to be faster and faster.
Well, and it means that things like college, like going to college for 4 years and picking your career for the rest of your life, right? Like, it's going to start to become, like, is that really the thing, right?
I think that's where we need to rethink about. We rethink the entire educational system, like even the incentives, because if you look at universities and how the systems that incentivize them is enrollment. Oh, enrollment is going up, but we should be really is keeping track of the outcomes. Like, okay, these students enrolled and what are they able to go do afterwards?
Yeah.
Right. So I think a lot of that is happening. And we're also entering, if we do the analogy with like with YouTube, right? So we're entering this, what we're calling, I'll call it the post YouTube era, which is before YouTube, you could only look at videos and movies by trained filmmakers. But then suddenly with YouTube, anybody can become a content creator and people are doing that. And now with AI, with agents and stuff, like before, only software engineers could build software. Now anybody can build software.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a place for that.
You don't need to learn Photoshop. Anybody can create an image.
Exactly.
Right?
So I think we're entering that new world. And I think that's, we've seen this stuff too. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but again, it's at a much faster scale for that. So
was there anything that you saw at TED that changed your perspective about the world of data?
No, I think this was,
or much, was it more validation?
This was more about kind of, I think, focusing more on the humanity. And so for me, what I'm thinking about for people who work in data is what's your special sauce that you can now augment a lot with AI that you can focus on? So I think I tell people, like, right now is super important to be able to go focus on almost like pick your basket where you want to put your eggs in, like focus on a particular industry and a particular domain that you want to kind of learn more. And I think it goes back into Bill Gurley was saying, this was like continuous learnings. People get fascinated about a topic. Like, those are the ones who really shine and have that continuous learning. So like, take your data expertise and be able to apply it into a particular domain where you find fascinating yourself. And then you take that fascination with your expertise, and I think that's going to supercharge you. So I think those are, and again, AI is a fantastic way to go to learn more. You use that as to our advantage.
Well, yeah, and if you become obsessed about something or interested in something, you can dig into it and become productive in it a lot faster, right?
So
it's interesting.
Well, a lot of things. So I'll post there kind of
check out Juan's post about TED. And then I know one other big topic that we've been talking about this week is how is the world of data kind of evolving, right? And in a world where AI really is at the fore, right? How does that change the way that we approach our data architectures, the way that we approach what our data teams are focused on? So why don't you talk a little bit about like what you're thinking there?
So we gave a talk at a customer invited us to give a keynote at their summit, where we're presenting kind of our point of view of we've lived in this world where everything has been data at the center. So data is the new oil. We need to be data driven and democratize data.
Big data, put all the data together.
Right?
And
the data literacy, yeah. Right? And all of these topics have been at the board level. Yes, what are we doing about data? Now, obviously, all of that's shifting now. What are we doing for AI? And then what has been the thing in the last couple of months is like everything is now knowledge and context. Mm-hmm. And those have been kind of the center of where all our world is.
Mm-hmm.
And our and what we've been arguing is like we need a kind of this Copernicus shift, who's like, wait, we're not saying that isn't important, but the real center of the world where data orbits around and knowledge orbits around content is really about the work that needs to be done. Because at the end of the day, why do you do data? Why do you put all this context together? Why are you doing all these governance? Why are you generating all these insights? It's so you can do your work, right? It's and work is at a high level. I need increased revenue, reduce risk, right? Mm-hmm. Reduce costs, mitigate risk, all that stuff. But very specifically, there's decisions that need to be made. Like as the salesperson needs to be able to get all their data in person right before that call, so they can have every. Right? There is an IT issue that's happening, and you need to be able to resolve that because mitigate risk around that. Customers are complaining about something. How can we deflect those issues as fast as possible and so forth? Like, that's the type of work. And you need to be able to bring in the right data, bring in the right context over to be able to make those decisions to do that work. And I think that's the shift that we need to go have. But I think also, this is kind of like cautious. Right now, everybody's talking about context. And I'm like seeing things like, oh my God, with agents, we can now generate all this context. We generated a million different descriptions of things. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, quantity versus quality, my friends. Like, what the heck?
We can tech the shit out of stuff now.
Yes. And so what? Like, what is the outcomes you're driving to? Like, yeah. What is the work that is going to be accomplished because you're able to go do all that type of stuff?
Yeah.
And I think that is the shift that we need to go have. And I think I've been having these conversations and people are realizing, yes, that should be the focus. But then when the rubber hits the road, the question is, wait, but how do I get there? Right? What is the maturity step to get there? If I finally get my data lake in place, now you're telling me that we got to move you're moving my cheese again.
Well, I think this is very uncomfortable, this idea for data people. I think maybe a little less uncomfortable for like a data leader. Like I hear more and more data leaders talking about like, we got to get in line, you know, we got to get aligned with the business. We got to drive decisions. We got to drive impact and action, right? But like, I think especially for data teams, there's, we just finally, like we did this whole big data thing. We did this data lake and the data lake house and everything like that. And like our machine learning, all this stuff like happened. And like our surface area expanded so greatly from just like, it used to just be like reporting in a database, right? So the surface area, and we finally kind of got it under control, right? We're like, okay, it's not a data lake. It's a data lake house, right? It's not a data swamp. It's a data mesh. It's, we're going to create this fabric and we're going to have these data products, which could be APIs, could be data sets. Right. And we're going to have some dashboards that we own centrally and semantics we own centrally, but there's going to be some that the business, but we're going to call that, raw or bronze and the good stuff, the stuff that we manage is going to be called gold. Right. And so we finally kind of got it under control. We have a scheme here and you're like, wait a second. You're telling me that like none of that matters.
Well, no. So I would say that
me that like, all that matters is I have to help the business decide how to sell more and how to cut costs and
yes, that's what I'm saying. But I also we have to acknowledge that depending on your organization, right?
Yeah.
How big an organization is, it can have so many different levels that people who are working at the data, they are so disconnected to them, right?
Yeah.
And that's something we have to acknowledge. Nevertheless, I do believe that this is kind of a leadership needs to run to be able to make sure that those connections all the way from the boots on the ground who are actually doing the work,
mm-hmm.
understand how this all gets connected to the objectives and the business value. So that's one thing that leaders need to be able to connect the dots over there.
Yeah.
But I think what's important is like everything that's happening is the foundational work. And one thing that I'm now just thinking about, like just, we can use this time to riff, is like, what would be the extent, what is the next step after a medallion, or like the whole medallion, all right, I put my data in, I'm able to go clean it up, and mm-hmm. I have my gold, I have my own way, my dashboards, okay, so what's next?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've had some thoughts on unclear thoughts right now, but I think that's what we need to start thinking about more. It's like, what is let's call it the medallion architecture 2.0, which I would believe that it's like it's gonna be more about driving insights to action. So it's like, okay, you put all this data together and you're generating these insights and analytics. What are you doing with that? Right. And I think that's one thing, driving insights to action. Another thing is about more on the contextualization. Is like, there's multiple versions of the truth. How are you managing all those different versions? Because these agents will need to be able to have that context to understand how to make those decisions and how to act. Go back to insights to action. And then I think another aspect there is like the feedback loop.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you look at data architectures in general, they lack a feedback loop. And I think now is a time where if we're going to unleash things to go see, just go do it on your own, agent. I still need to keep track of what you're doing and get feedback around that stuff. And if humans are too much involved, that's feedback too that you need to go and say, all these humans are involved to go say accept. Like, you could probably unleash that more. So I think, you know, that's kind of where my mind is heading with this.
So in this world, you probably have a new kind of data product, right? Where it's more of an action product or something like that, right? So there's something around how you start to close the loop with the business. And then there's something around observability of outcomes, right? And that, and I know this is something that we talk a little bit, that's starting to get a little bit hyped around context graphs and decision traces and things like that, that like seeing how the data is being used and implemented, and just, did it result in a success? Did it result in a failure? Did you try to do something autonomously, but it failed and it required a human to get involved? It was a human escalation and then they had to make a decision. Well, what was the thing that the human did, right? What was their choice that they did that had to override that this context ends up becoming really useful to see how you're closing the loop with actually having an impact with the business.
So here's a comment right now that just got up is, I wonder how 8 billion AI bots will react. And so if I start thinking about it, if we start unleashing all of these agents and people can go create anything, in a way, couldn't that be the analogy is like, oh, you can hire whoever you want. Because you need all this help. Oh, let me go hire a bunch of people to go do all these little tasks that I need to go do. And I technically don't have to pay them, right? I mean, pay my token and stuff, but I'm like not really hiring them. So then you can just hire a bunch of agents to go do your things. And you can so easily co-create more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
At what point is that like not sustainable? And we actually need to put the guardrails. And I think this is why like we talk about, not to get salesy here, but we talk about our AI control tower, because you want to be able to control these things, right? Because businesses are reinventing themselves because they need to be able to have all these agents. But we are going to be releasing more and more agents. And at some point, I think this is going to be the interesting thing within organizations, is that they're going to, some people are like, yes, let's go, let it rip.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have these 8 billion bots doing things, and how are they going to be acting and stuff? So I don't know. I think that there's the other aspect I was thinking about this week was, if you start defining these agents, because now these agents are like, you find these skills and stuff, right? So you start to put a lot of your context, your semantics and stuff inside those skills.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have different skills and different agents. And so technically you're putting your business logic inside those agents.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know that they're not contradicting with somebody else? And how does an agent know that they should be able to go interact with other things that have similar stuff? I mean, in a way, this is not analogous. This is analogous to like, oh, I decide to put some business logic in this application that I created. Now I have multiple applications, and I don't. And the only way to understand what this stuff actually does is kind of diving into the business logic that I put inside my applications.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the same thing with agents, because agents at the end of the day is a software. It's a software program. So it's just the bar to entry is so low that now before you to build an application, you have to have software engineers. You have to pay all this money for a SaaS. Anybody can do that. But now, with great powers come great responsibility.
I mean, in a world where resources are no constraint, then all sorts of weird things happen, right? You can build whatever you want. You can build unlimited dashboards, unlimited data lakes, unlimited.
I was talking to a CDO this week, and this person was saying, yeah, we have a lot of resources, which is also a problem, because then we get to do a lot of things that actually when you have more constraints, we should be spending all this money, like we have more constraint, forces us to kind of think more strategically, I mean more objectively what needs to happen.
Yeah. I mean, you get these sorts of organizational design problems, which, you know, I think, just since we're kind of ranting and going in all sorts of different directions here, you know, I've been thinking a lot of, like, when I was in college, I studied a lot around organizational design. And I've been thinking lately that a lot of the organizational design concepts apply to bots, to agents, right? Where, like, you need hierarchy, like who's in charge. You need policy. Like you need,
what's your guideline?
You need purpose. Like, what is the goal? Right. You need to update the purpose on a regular basis. Right. We talk about like quarterly or annually. Right. But like, but you don't want to update it every day because then you create confusion.
So this is interesting. Now you're saying this, like these agents, like inside their prompt and their skills, you need to give them your OKRs.
Yeah. And so I think this is fascinating because I think in this world of like unlimited resources, I think there's like a part of us that believes like maybe it will be like ants and it'll just like magically swarm. But my hypothesis is that it's actually that, you know, when we look at like organizational design and we look at OKRs and we look at bureaucracy process, right? We usually look at those things and we think that those things are unfortunate kind of broken byproducts of humans. But what if those aren't broken byproducts? What if actually they are, even though they frustrate us, they are very important and they're actually a feature of complex multi-agent systems. Just happens that usually the agents are humans in the past. I don't know. I find this fascinating that you might need to have a board of agent directors that tells your CEO agent what to do and, you know, make sure that you have proper agent stakeholders that are providing their voting. Yeah. Anyways, it gets very interesting
Just because we do this with humans is also what we should also do that for.
Oh, totally.
Agents,
you shouldn't just copy paste.
Right.
But I think that, you know, things like OpenClaw, right? And then people are like, oh, I can unleash an army of agents, and then an army of stupid happens.
By the way, the OpenClaw's founder, Peter, was at the
TED, right?
And yeah, his talk is available. So if you want to hear the history of how that started, go watch that. It's a great talk.
Oh, that's fascinating. I'll have to watch that. But, you know, some of this organizational design stuff may actually be super relevant. Yeah.
And I think it's also in a way, it means that we are treating these agents, AI, as if it were another, our colleagues, right? I just wonder how we need to find that balance of like, I mean, we don't know what that balance is. We're going to go find that out. So
we're going to figure that out. And the answer is probably going to be, it depends, right?
Of course
it is. Like, it's going to be hybrid. Human organizations, right? In some cases, it's better to have a flat organization, right? In some cases, it's better to have a hierarchical organization, right? So, I mean, like, When does it make sense to have one or the other? When it's very clear what the goal is and you just need to have really concerted coordination, well, it's better to have a hierarchical organization. And if you need high creativity, well, then it's better to have an agency. It's better to have a flat organization, right?
And what's going to be really interesting now that you say about coordination is like coordinating between humans is super freaking hard.
Yeah, messy as hell.
And then there's all and so for things that are very objective and still need high coordination, like that's exactly the type of stuff that humans shouldn't be involved, because like there's a very clear objective that needs to be done, right? It's not subjective. We need to go do. There's a lot of things that need to go pass around different because of the systems, how things are just set up. Mm-hmm. That's something that agents should be able to go deal with very nicely. But the moment that something gets very subjective, and I think it goes back into like probably an 80-20 rule, which is like, 80% will be things that are, it's okay. It's not going to be mission critical. It's not mission critical. It's like, we're open to creativity. We're open to this agency. For a 20%, like, oh, this must be this way, right? That's for regulatory purposes, financial reasons. Like, it has to be this way. So that may be more constrained around things. But for an 80%, it may be like, if we don't even trust humans perfectly with the stuff, like, we'll just put some agents to it too and we'll see what happens. So
I don't know. Is it going to be better?
I don't know. I think it goes back to like my earlier points. Like, I think this is how this is what helps us regain our humanity. It's like, I don't want to be able to go, I don't want to be able to go do, I don't want to do those boring tasks. Yeah. Let me go focus on the ones that are actually going to be more fruitful, and I'm going to be more, not just passionate, but like I'm going to be more fascinated about things to go do.
Yeah.
And
so, so to tie this back a little bit to the comments about like work being at the center and work, and how does work kind of play into the data stack and the future of data architecture? I think there are some things that are maybe a little bit more non-controversial, maybe hard, but non-controversial. Like, for example, decision intelligence, right, is a field that's been around for a while.
Which is something that I personally need to understand more. I'm actually curious about, like, I'm actually curious for data folks listening, like, how much have you all been looking into and learning about decision science, decision intelligence?
Decision science is, that, so I think that's something we're all as an industry going to have to learn more about. I think that's, even though some people would say like, oh man, you know, that's hard, or it's going to take some time. But I think that's kind of non-controversial, like with decision pieces, right? Something that is more, I think, open is that, you know, for the last several years, especially the last few years, I'll pick on catalog because, you know, catalog and cocktails here. You know, one of the ways that we've talked about taking action with metadata is we talk about active metadata. And usually active metadata is you take the metadata and you want to tie it back somehow. And that tying it back usually is some kind of a point-to-point connection, right? And so, I want to take that metadata and I want to push it back into Snowflake. Or I want to take that metadata and I'm going to have a program that looks for issues, and if there's an issue, it's going to push some information back into my, you know, my ServiceNow or my Salesforce or something like that, right? So that was kind of like, it was more of a point-to-point thing. More recently now, we have this idea of catalog as kind of a context layer, MCP. Mm-hmm. Let those semantics and the information about your catalog be available to agents. That's kind of self-service. Mm-hmm. But like, what else does work look like when it's doing work? Like, for example, do we need to start thinking about there being a bunch of agents, and those agents are using our data products? They're using the context that we're providing. Are those agents consumers? Are the agents data products themselves?
So my immediate thought goes back to our librarian friends. Mm-hmm. And I think that we'll need to have the reference librarian, right? The agents that will be able to do these types of reference interviews to be able to say, like,
so agents are trying to do things.
Because here's the thing,
they come, like, to the library.
And part of that library will have some agents that will, I mean, will try to get those information needs. And now, if people are creating these agents, right? And they'll say, well, was this agent created with a fixed objective? Or did somebody put in an agent that was kind of loose what they're going to go do? So even that is like, how unclear or clear is it that you're trying to go do? So you need to be able to kind of have those back and forth.
So the first job of the reference librarian is to understand the true
information needs.
The true information need.
Because at the end, probably it's like, where is the original input coming from? Like, it may be coming from a human, right? If it is coming from a human, maybe that is something that is ambiguous itself. You want to be able to kind of understand what is the actual need. So I don't know where I'm going with this, but the librarians are always on my mind. But okay. I think there's a lot to learn.
When we think about how the data stack's evolving, right? You need the reference librarian.
I think that's something that is a very, it's very inspiring to think about, to take their approaches and how combine all this stuff that's happening. At the end of the day, like, what I mean about work is like, you're at an organization and there's objectives that your organization was trying to accomplish. I mean, this is a human thing, right? That's why humans get together to build a company, right? So there's goals that are established by people, and yeah, part of that, we live in a capitalist world, so we want to make money and save money, all that type of stuff. So these objectives need to be defined, and then all these work that needs to happen, we need to take decisions to make that work happen such that we can accomplish those objectives of that organization. So I think, like, the more we get to wonder, and I think this kind of elevates back to our humanity, is like, mm-hmm. we get to get focused more on the, why are we all here together to make at this company, at this organization? What is the goal of organization we're trying to go do? And let's make sure that we're optimizing for that while there's all this stuff in the bottom that happens underneath the hood, which that stuff should be automated. It should be automated. It should be autonomous and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it enables us to go focus on the things that really makes us, again, makes us human. Like, again, human companies are human endeavors. Companies are not, they're human beings who decide that we have all this interest together and like, hey, let's work together to make this goal. And that's a company. And I think we should be, this is the opportunity to focus on this.
You said that you're a techno optimist, and I was cool with everything you said until this last part here. Like,
what?
Just the companies are a human endeavor. I think that we're going to see companies that are completely agentic endeavors.
But
the three humans and 10,000 agents.
Well,
right?
I think that's true. I think it's already happening.
But I guess the human endeavor is the three humans.
The whole open claw thing is already kind of showing this. I mean, if you look at Peter's talk, he talks about how, like, somebody was making beer and .. They like started a website to go sell the beer because they had made too much beer, and obviously the agent did all that by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it all started with people getting together to make beer. So I think it all starts with humans.
Okay.
And I think the agency is like, goes back to the inspiring, saying, hey, you could do this. And you're like, yeah, or I don't care, but go do it anyways for me. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was watching a video of, I forget who it was. I'm sure some people listening may know, but he's like a really senior, like, engineer architect at a company. He was being interviewed by, I forget if it was 60 Minutes or something like that, like a news group, right? And they asked him, so like, in this world of AI, like, you're using AI to code everything, right? He's like, yeah, like, I use 100% of my code is developed by AI now. And then they said, well, what's your job? He's like, he thought about it for a second. He's like, my job is to have taste and to have discernment of what is impactful and what is not. And
I love that.
And basically, that's what he said. And it was like, ah.
And I think
that that's the human endeavor. Huh?
And that is the reconnecting to humanity, because that's the stuff that you really enjoy. I have that taste of how things should be done. It could be this way. It could be that way. Made a preference for this.
Yeah.
And I thought about there's a reason how I did this, right? I mean, it's like architecting and think about it. Like, there is some imagination. Humans are always be there to. Humans are problem solvers. That's what we do, right? We always enjoy entertainment. Humans may be doing entertainment, machines may be doing entertainment, but we always seek entertainment. So, I think it goes back to, like, AI is helping us. We get to focus more on our problem solving. We get to focus more on finding our joy and things.
We get to have more fun.
But we also remember that work is, there's a purpose. Like, we work not just for a paycheck. Yeah, I mean, in an idealistic world, like, people need to work and they need to survive. But also, work is a purpose. There's hopefully you find a passionate fascination for something.
Yeah, I think the non-silver lining is that as certain jobs change, then maybe you don't like the way your job is evolving. You know, like, you and me tend to be, we're a little bit more social. We're a little bit more orchestrators, thought leaders, right? Some people really like coding. I guess we'll just see how things go here. You get to be an architect, a code architect.
Yes. And I think this is going to be an interesting statement. I'd argue that people who quote unquote like to code are really, they like to solve problems, and they're the architects, and coding is just a manifestation of, like, okay, I figured out what the solution, let's go implement that solution. But there is more fascination into doing the problem solving before actually writing the code. And then the thing is that when you write the code, you bring down your level of abstraction to something more specific. And what something that you thought that you understood and you thought you solved the moment you turn it into code, you realize it doesn't work. And then you're like, oh, wait, I didn't really understand that problem very well. That's why I couldn't, that's why the code is not working or it's inefficient. And then you find the next problem you have to go solve. So yeah, you have a good comment there. Taste is everything.
Maybe that's circling back to the beginning. That's maybe what it is to be human.
Is to have good
taste.
It's taste.
Yeah. Taste on what's good, what's impactful. Also, what tastes good.
Yeah. What was it? I finished my beer. I think we have to finish it because I need to.
This must have tasted better than mine. What else should we hit today?
This has been a long rant. What else was on your mind?
Well, in a week and a half, we got the Knowledge Conference.
Yes. All right. So,
In Las Vegas.
So Las Vegas, for folks who are coming to the ServiceNow Knowledge Conference in Las Vegas, join us. If you're on the fence, it's going to be worth it. I mean, all the content, all the keynotes, and also Idris Elba and Backstreet Boys at the Sphere on Thursday.
I'm most excited for DJ Idris. He's actually a professional DJ. I didn't realize that. I learned because of this. And for those who don't know, Idris Elba is kind of like our spokesperson for ServiceNow.
He's a CEO.
Yeah, he's the CEO of the pretend ServiceNow company. So it's funny.
So that's it. And then the following week, I will be in Gartner, which is going to be really weird because the first time I go to a Gartner without you, and this is going to be my 10th, yeah. I think our 10th Gartner.
Yes.
And they're not going to be there.
Yes. I'll be home.
And then we're going to be that's our 6-year anniversary of our podcast.
So we'll have to do it hybrid style.
And then,
But that'll be cool.
Gartner. And for folks listening, I'm hosting a dinner at Gartner with the one and only Sanjeev Mohan, who cannot replace Tim, but he'll.
That's all right. Sanjeev, I'm cool with you being stand in Tim. You can be backup Tim.
So we do that. So if data leaders are listening, please let us. A note, puts us if you want to come. Unfortunately, I won't be at the Knowledge Graph conference because the same week that is that Knowledge Conference for ServiceNow. So that's unfortunate. And then I think
too much knowledge that week.
And then the following week, I'll post about this soon. I'm doing a little bit of a road show in EMEA. I'll be in Vienna, Munich, Frankfurt, and Zurich. So that's going to be the week after Gartner. So I'll post about it. So I'd love to catch up with folks.
Yeah. And I'll leave one kind of call to action with our community, which is that, you know, Juan and I are thinking a lot about, what can we do next to really help the data community, to feed back to the data community? You know, should we be doing more like digital event kinds of things? Should we, you know, be organizing more around community? Are there some existing communities that we should be leaning more into? So, you know, hey, just ping me, ping Juan. Curious about your thoughts on like what's some cool stuff that we can get more involved in or start and organize around.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers. Thanks for following.
Enjoy your Friday.